Canada, the nice guy, the helper, the peacekeeper in the world. That's the image of ourselves that many Canadians take pride in. You could call it our expression of patriotism. But when reality doesn't match this image, there are two handy responses. The first, we didn't mean to mess you over. And the second, don't blame us. Blame the big bully in the United States who made us do it. Can Canada's role in the overthrow of Haiti's elected president in February 2004 be understood by this image or these excuses? Eve Engler doesn't think so. He is co-author of a new book, Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor. We've reached him in the Maritimes, where he's currently on a speaking tour, one that brings him to Vancouver this Friday. Good morning, Eve, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Karen.
A coup planned and implemented by foreign powers overthrew Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the elected president of Haiti, in February 2004. And he was also deposed after his first election in 1990. Can you tell us what happened between 1990 and 2004?
Yeah, basically on December 16th, 1990, this is the first free and fair elections in Haitian history. Jean-Bertrand Aristide was elected with 67% of the vote. The next highest candidate had 14% of the vote. Within 8 months of taking office, since September 30th, actually yesterday being the anniversary, and there's protests in Vancouver and all around the world, on September 30th, 1991, he was overthrown in what was later found out to be a CIA-backed coup, spent 3 years in exile, was finally returned with the change of administration, Clinton administration, from the Bush senior to the Clinton administration in the U.S., but also after immense amounts of international outrage and certain political interests for Clinton in terms of looking like he was a tough guy, and Clinton's desire to stop the Haitian so-called boat people from arriving on Florida shores, which had over 60,000 Haitians had arrived. And he was also returned on the condition that he adopt the economic program of the candidate he beat, Marc Bazin, who was a former World Bank official, sort of a neoliberal economic program. And he was also returned on the condition that he doesn't, the years he was spent outside of Haiti, that they don't count. He wasn't allowed to remake up those years. So it acted like, the Americans acted like he was in office the whole time he was in Venezuela and in the U.S. So he only had 1 year left of his mandate. So he passed on political power for the first time in Haitian history to another elected president, René Préval, who had a somewhat turbulent but generally seen as a fairly positive mandate in Haitian history. And then finally Aristide and his newly formed Fanmi Lavalas party won over 80% of the 7,000 posts, elected posts across the country in May of 2000, and obviously the presidency in November of 2000, Aristide once again elected. And once again, the powers that be, the U.S., France, Canada, and the Haitian elite, did all they could to undermine Aristide and the Fanmi Lavalas' mandate. And finally, he was overthrown with Canadian soldiers securing the airport he says he was kidnapped from on February 29th, 2004.
Why did the foreign powers want him out?
Well, I think there's been a, within the Bush administration, Bush senior and Bush junior administrations, there's been a long dislike for Aristide. Many of the players who were involved in the first campaign of demonizing Aristide, Roger Noriega, for instance, who was assistant to Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms is a well-known, infamous racist senator from, I believe, South Carolina, who did the campaign to demonize Aristide during the first coup d'etat. Roger Noriega was actually the person who wrote the OAS resolutions that hemmed in Organization of American State resolutions that hemmed in the Aristide government, and he was obviously a high level official in the Bush Jr. administration. There's a couple of Canadian companies, Gildan Activewear, one of the biggest T-shirt makers for the U.S. market, that subcontracts significant T-shirt making to guy by the name of Andy Appet. Andy Appet is the head of the group of 184, the main so-called civil society organization in Haiti that helped to overthrow Aristide. And Andy Appet, like Gildan, was not happy when the Aristide government increased the minimum wage in 2003. Before leaving office, Aristide recognized Cuba in 1996, and there was Cuban doctors in Haiti doing work, which is never popular in Washington. Also, one of the things that while Aristide did implement the economic, to a certain extent, a neoliberal economic agenda when he was returned in 1994, he didn't fully privatize the state-owned companies, and that left him, that was the Clinton administration felt that he had betrayed them by refusing to privatize five state-owned companies, specifically the telecom company. So there's a series of other Canadian corporate interests, as well as sort of geopolitical interests in terms of Venezuela and a prep run for what might happen in Venezuela.
Canada's been central in developing a doctrine for intervening in foreign countries, the responsibility to protect doctrine. What are the elements of this?
Well, basically, actually, this responsibility to protect doctrine just became international law at the initiative of the Canadian government. That's about 3 weeks ago with the UN, big UN reforms there in New York. So that's now international law, and that's actually the doctrine that Denis Paradis, who was sort of the orchestrator of Canadian policy regarding overthrowing Aristide, and actually organized a meeting a year before the coup, and as reported in Actualité magazine in Quebec, Aristide's overthrow and putting Haiti under UN tutelage were discussed. This high-level meeting where high-level officials from the American, French, and El Salvadorian governments were invited to discuss Haiti's future, but no one from Haiti's elected government was invited. And basically, this, as Denis Paradis, to justify the Canadian intervention in Haiti, Denis Paradis continually referred to this doctrine of responsibility to protect. And basically, the idea is that the powers that be have a responsibility to intervene in a country when there's, you know, ethnic conflict, genocide, or the state is deemed to have failed its citizenry. This is the doctrine they use to justify intervention in Haiti. But what this doctrine does not take into account is the role of those same powers that, in Haiti's case, that intervened, their role in creating this supposed failure. A destabilization campaign that included an economic embargo against the elected government, cutting off of economic assistance, including diverting whatever assistance that was given, diverting it to NGOs, non-governmental organizations, but NGOs that are almost entirely in opposition to the elected government. So creating a civil society in opposition to elected government, and at the same time either actively or passively supporting a campaign of violence against the elected government. So in October of 2000, there was a coup attempt by Guy Philippe, former Haitian military trained by the U.S. in Ecuador, a coup attempt. He and the others fled to the Dominican Republic, and over the next 4 years, continuously waged attacks. July 28, 2001, six or seven police officers were killed in attack, coordinated attacks against police stations across the country. December 17, 2001, they actually armed men with Guy Philippe came in from the Dominican Republic and captured the National Palace, killing a handful of guards. And again, in May of 2003, another attack. So what this doctrine of responsibility to protect fails to take into account is the role of the same countries that intervene, their role in creating this supposed failure, and not only their short-term role, like, for instance, the destabilization campaign against the Aristide government, but also the longer term, the history of Western imperialism in not letting Haiti develop, which is a long and disturbing history.
And under this doctrine, who decides when they can intervene?
Well, that's exactly it, right? I mean, I think you could make the argument that what happened with the Bush administration's response to Katrina, that Canada, Mexico, and Cuba should have intervened, and because the Bush administration failed to protect the poor and black of New Orleans. But obviously, that's not how this doctrine is implemented. It's implemented. It's at the whim of the powers that be, the powers that control the UN Security Council, and that's obviously U.S., France, and other, and Canada, and in the Haiti case, who get to decide.
Haiti doesn't have oil. What are the major economic interests that foreign powers like Canada have in controlling Haiti?
Well, as I mentioned, it's a sweatshop, sweatshop zone, and one of the arguments people make is that Haiti has the lowest wages in the Western Hemisphere. So when the whole corporate globalization discussion was on the table, was always left always put forward this concept of a race to the bottom, and I think that Haiti's really the bottom of that race to the bottom. The wages are lowest, don't have to pay any taxes, no environmental standards, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that Haiti, not only is there direct economic interest with a company like Gildan that has operations in Haiti and that subcontracts in Haiti, but you have an overarching sort of neoliberal mindset that likes the fact that Haiti stays that cheap to do business in, because then when workers in Jamaica or Mexico try to organize a union, the employer has the opportunity to say, well, you know, we're just going to move shop to Haiti where we can pay them a quarter of the wages and still be as close to the U.S. and Canadian markets. So there's this neoliberal there's a sort of a larger use that is made of Haiti, as well as these direct Canadian corporate interests. And a couple of Canadian mining companies, Saint-Geneviève and KWG Resources, that had concessions, 25-year concessions for copper and gold. And they, back in the mid-90s, they weren't happy with a peasant sort of uprising or protests against attempts at exploiting exploiting the resources under their land. And at that time, they actually blamed, to a certain extent, they blamed Aristide for these protests, even though he wasn't in office. So there is these corporate interests. They're not as significant as, you know, the oil of Iraq. But the truth is that there has been very little political cost for the Liberal government, or for the Bush administration, or for Jacques Chirac in France, for their intervention. So the minimal gains that have been at a very, very low cost.
There's a large Haitian community in Quebec. What are the opinions in that community about the coup and Canada's role?
By and large, people obviously oppose the coup, it's not as universal as it was in the 1991 coup, where you had, you know, 10,000 plus people on the streets of Montreal, and, you know, 60,000 people in New York and stuff like that. So there's no doubt that the opposition is not as strong. There was certainly a weakening of support for Aristide over the years, and that was even part of this destabilization campaign. The International Republican Institute actually put money and resources into not only media in Haiti and, you know, convincing them to put programs and essentially, you know, anti-government propaganda or anti-Aristide propaganda, but they actually even put resources into the community radio stations, the Creole radio stations in Boston, Miami, New York, and Montreal. So there was a weakening of support for the Aristide government, but nevertheless, still the majority of the community opposes the coup and opposes the violent repression that's taken place over the last 18 months. But it isn't as uniform as the last coup. But also, one sort of thing on that topic that I think is important to note is that with the nomination of Michel Jean as Canada's new Governor General, I think, and it has not been reported in any of the media on the nomination, I think one of the reasons for nominating her was the Liberal government knows that the Haitian community in Montreal is increasingly mad at them for their role and intervention in Haiti. I think to a certain extent, this was there's a handful of Liberal government seats, especially in Montreal, that have a fairly significant number of voters from the Haitian community, and this was an attempt. Nominating Michel Jean was partly an attempt to win favor with the sort of less politicized sector of the Haitian community.
What response have you had across the country about the role of the Canadian government and how it does go against what we often think of Canada, our flattering self-image?
Well, yeah, we had a little bit of I had some people who don't really seem prepared to believe it. Myself and Anthony Fenton, who's a co-author, when we do a talk all about a whole talk all basically just focused on Canadian foreign policy with very little discussion about the U.S., I think that's quite unique in Canada. I think that the majority of talks, even in the left-wing communities, are on international affairs, focus on how the U.S. is doing something, and then sort of and Canada has helped out, kind of talks. And we've our talks are basically entirely about Canada, and I think that sort of takes people aback a little bit. But I think so far people have been fairly open to it, to the information being put out. And at the end of the day, we're talking about facts here. There's very hard to dispute the basics. I mean, you can get into arguments about Aristide, but the basics about Canada's intervention, the Canadian government's even open about these facts. Obviously, they don't call it a coup, but they're open about Canadian soldiers being there before Aristide was removed. They're open about the funding the Canadian government's giving for the installed government. They're open about the fact that they're giving all this political support for this unelected government in place. They're open about the fact Canadian police are training Haitian police. They obviously don't admit that Haitian police are killing supporters of Aristide. They don't admit all the political prisoners, but the rest of Canada's role, they are quite open about. So it's quite hard to argue with the basic facts of the coup.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me this morning.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Yves Engler. He is the co-author with Anthony Fenton of a new book, Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor. Both authors will be speaking in Vancouver this Friday, October 7th at 7:30 p.m., and that's at Vancouver Community College, the downtown campus at 250 West Pender. Yves Engler also wrote Playing Left Wing, From Rink Rat to Student Radical. Besides his educational work, Yves has been actively organizing campaigns and protests against the Canadian government's role in the Haiti coup. In June, Yves interrupted a press conference of Canada's Foreign Minister Pierre Pettigrew and splashed him with red paint, symbolizing the real blood that has been shed by poor Haitians because of the coup.